everyone. Welcome to Drive Through HR, the number one internet daily radio show for the HR professionals. And this is your host, Nisha Raghavan, and my partners, William Tinkup and Brian Vampan, are not available today. So this is going to be me doing a solo with our wonderful guest, Chris Dyer. Hey, Chris, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I'm glad to have you here with us today. So how are you doing today, Chris?
I'm excellent. I'm in California, and even when it's bad weather here, it's still generally better than most other people have it, so it's hard to complain.
Oh, yeah. Well, glad to hear you're safe and stay warm. And here in Dallas, also, it's a little chilly today. We have a little bit of snow, which we haven't expected it so far, but then everything is going good. So why don't you kick off, if you can do us a favor, would you please introduce yourself so that our audience can know a little bit more about you?
Sure. My name is Chris Dyer, and I'm the CEO of a company called People G2. We are a human capital intelligence firm that really helps with anyone who has a people-related decision they need to make when we have a solution for them. Background checks, employment screening, tenant screening, business intelligence, all that type of services for any of those people-related decisions. And over the last few years, I've been very fortunate to kind of been thought out as considered an expert in the background checking industry. So we have really done as much as we can in the last few years to be a source of education and driving information to HR experts and CEOs and, you know, anyone, even small businesses looking to hire their first employee to make sure they have all the information they need.
Well, wonderful. And I'd like to highlight the Talent Talk radio show as well. Why didn't you talk a little bit about Talent Talk radio show?
Sure. So last year I kind of was finding out that I go to a lot of conferences and a lot of events and CEO roundtables, and I'm a kind of an inquisitive person, and I like to learn new things all the time. And it's a part of what helps us stay on top of what's happening for our clients and for HR professionals is by me being out there talking to people. And so I was getting such great information, and I'm sharing it with my team. And one day we said, you know, it'd be really cool if we could – get this out a little farther. And so we decided to start hosting a radio show. We have it in a local radio station. It's not although we do a podcast later on, it is a live show at a real radio station that we record every week. And we have on people who kind of fall into at least one of two categories, if not both. And that being that they're very talented, people that have had success, that have a lot to offer and teach us, both from what to do and what not to do, and also people who are really kind of in the trenches with, being HR professionals, and how do they find the best people for their company, how do they brainstorm, how do they, you know, really drive their culture, and it's amazing some of the things that people have told us. There's obviously things that are common sense that, you know, people think they know, or they go, that makes sense, I should know that, but amazing how many things there are that are just kind of a foundation, and it's good for people to be reminded of that. And then there's a lot of really cool new things that people are doing, new ideas, new ways that they're approaching problems. And so our show tries to expose that, and we also, our guests usually share, you know, what kind of things they're reading, you know, what books, what blogs, where are they getting their inspiration from? And it's kind of a great way to push that out to the HR world and entrepreneurs. You know, I think we started last year, and we already have 13,000 regular followers on our podcast on iTunes and Android. So it's been, we weren't sure if it was just going to be me talking to five people every week, or, you know, we were going to get some traction. And so far, it's been really exciting. We've gotten great response.
Well, it's so fascinating to hear your journey and the impact that you make to the HR community, which is so amazing. So let's kick off the big question of the day. What's keeping you up at night? Or let me ask you another way, what's keeping your clients up at night? So you can talk about either of the topic, you're talking to a lot of HR professionals either on the radio or when you go to conferences or on your business aspect. So what's on top of your mind today?
Well, maybe I'll briefly kind of tell you what, give you the answer to both, and if you can decide which one maybe you want to dive into a little bit deeper.
Sure.
Now, so what's keeping me up at night is there's really been a lot of radical changes in the quality in the background checking industry, and I not in a good way. You know, there's things like industry consolidation has really impacted a lot of companies buying other companies, you know, and then they're possibly going to sell that off. I mean, so companies are finding that their background check company, which maybe was doing a good job for them, has now been purchased by one or more other companies just in the last 12 months or 18 months. And that's completely changed the quality of their product, changed who they deal with, changed their pricing, changed everything. And in most cases, it's, none of those changes have ever been positive, have really been negative. And so we most of our growth, you know, we were on the 5,000 list last year, the fastest growing companies, and most of that growth came from people calling us like almost in tears, saying, "Please help us. We're finally ready to listen. You were telling us that there's a right way to do this, and we're ready because we've just been put to the mill with all these problems." And so people have been coming to us to try to help them. You know, there's been a lot of public record consolidation and how you deal with that. And really the kind of explosion of social media and people out there doing things on social media they probably shouldn't be doing in checking out different applicants. And then the last piece of that has been FTC fines on background check companies and a ton of class action suits because they're really not – a lot of them are doing things the wrong way. And so what keeps me up at night is that we have this really great story, and we've been doing this incredible work for people kind of in this old-school way of thinking but with new technology and innovation of being able to do the background checks properly and making sure that our clients are getting the right information, legal information, and not getting set up to possibly be in, you know, lawsuits or class action suits or things because they're doing things with databases they shouldn't be, or not running a background check properly, or not, you know, having things filtered because of way of state law reads and things like that. So we find it a challenge because HR people don't like to be sold to, and HR people probably have their phones off the hook, and they have more emails they can read in a day. And so it's kind of a challenge for us, and how do we get our message out there? How do we let them know we're out there if they need us? And that we're kind of – we are offering something different than what the market has done. So that's a challenge for us, and I think that kind of leads into what I think is keeping our clients up at night, or if I be a little more broad about that, what's keeping HR up at night? And that really is – and that'll, you know, if you, you know, how much you're seeing of this with the people you talk to on your show. But there really is a kind of white noise, like an overwhelming white noise of just there's so much happening that I can't even imagine how HR people are able to keep up. I mean, they have their regular duties, and then there's so much change happening. Local laws, state laws, EEOC guidances, case law, opinions by, you know, AIGs and states that really affect what they're doing, how they're doing it, not just from a background check perspective, but, you know, all different parts of HR. And so I think the real change that's going on right now is that, you know, business really has pushed HR, you know, from really productive programs like Lean or Six Sigma, I think, for HR to be objective, to really put in these really objective policies and procedures and practices into place to keep things uniform and predictable. I mean, that's how manufacturing works. So that's how other departments work, and it's great. But HR is really being pushed from a legal standpoint, EEO standpoint, EEOC standpoint, to be subjective. And that's to look at every person individually, to really to understand that person may have different laws applied to them based. So, I mean, if your company is located in Texas, but you're hiring someone in Florida, and, I mean, you have – it's different for that person than it may be for someone who lives in Texas who you're hiring in Texas and your company's in Texas. So you need to look at everyone subjectively and understand what your requirements are and then have to document it. That is another kind of requirement. So I think in the long run, for companies, this subjective process that we're moving to is better for them to secure great talent and to find people who are have the character and the skills that they want. And I think it's better for our society as a whole. But right now we're stuck in limbo, and we're kind of in the middle of this change, and no one really knows what to do about it. And there's a little bit of a duck and cover mentality right now, and they're hoping no one notices if they're not doing it right. And the EEOC, and not to keep pounding on them, but also there are just thousands of these, I would say, less than reputable lawyers. Other people may find them as, you know, saving grace. So I guess a matter of whatever shade of however you look at things, but that are filing these class action suits one after another on all these companies and different, you know, for the way in which they're doing things that are really driving a lot of costs and things through the court that are really troubling. So I hope that wasn't too long of an answer. I know when I'm hosting, I usually like it if the guest doesn't talk for too long and I just talk forever, so I apologize.
Hey, no, not at all. People are waiting to hear what you are speaking. So while you talked about, you know, securing that great talent, or let me say securing that right talent within an organization and connecting that with the background checking, I would like to hear some of the stories that you had. Probably going through a candidate's profile, you might have seen, oh, this is a right fit, but after doing a background screening, a different story. So do you have any surprises that when you go through background screening for particular candidates?
Well, I mean, there's lots of different stories. So there's always the fun stories that people want to know about, like, you know, what's the craziest thing that someone's been, you know, convicted for and things like that. I mean, some of the things that people find funny but I kind of find a little bit sad is, you know, getting a misdemeanor for your dog being off the leash. Or, you know, misdemeanor, I think in Texas it's still this way in some parts. I mean, you can get a misdemeanor for bouncing a $5 check. And so, you know, if companies have these broad policies of never hiring anyone who has, you know, a misdemeanor on their or a felony on their record, and you don't look at these things subjectively, you could be missing out on the world's best, you know, salesperson or best HR person or best, you know, bookkeeper or whatever because they didn't have their dog on a leash and they made a mistake one time. And they have a misdemeanor now, you know, for that. And is that really the kind of person you want to block out of your company? And I would argue probably not. But when you use these, you know, very blanket, objective policies, you lose people who you might have kept, you know, when you look at them subjectively. I think that, you know, some of the other crazy things that have happened, you know, people – twin brothers or twin sisters, you know, like use their identity and they get arrested and then they put it under their twin's name. And, you know, so there's some process involved where, you know, you have a good twin and a bad twin and one of them's got to get all that cleared up. And we've seen some crazy things with that. There's always lots of different stories. Usually it's the big ones that our, you know, new clients have been talking to us about are a lot of the big sort of name brand background checking companies that you could think of have gone to these database driven, you know, hey, we can get your background checked back in the same day. I mean, if you're getting your background checked back in the same day, there's a problem. Because that means they're not going to the court. They're not really doing the real research. And so what ends up happening is these HR people come to us and say, we ran a background check, and they didn't find any of the records on this person, and we hired them, and then we had a problem, or, you know, staffing companies say we hired them, they went in, they caused problems, we lost our client, because they're buying these cheap, fast products that, in the end, don't have all the information they should have. They're missing records, they're missing data. That's one end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum is, and then they provide these databases, and they say, you know, hey, run John Smith, and then the background check company gives them back 500 pages of records, none of which even match their applicant. But what is the HR person, how are they supposed to interpret that or determine what to do? Those are the kinds of things that we protect our clients from, that we have tools and things in place so that doesn't happen, you know.
Mm-hmm. So how much time does it normally take for this background checking for a candidate and then for getting it back to HR?
Yeah, so huge variance depending upon what you're doing. So let's say if it's something like a Social Security search and a county criminal search and maybe a DMV and a national criminal. Let's just say something like that. You know,
mm-hmm.
for us, our average turnaround time, you'd be somewhere in the 24 to 36-hour time frame for most of the country. There are parts of the country where it's always going to take a long time. I mean, Clark County, Nevada is going to take 2 weeks no matter what you do. If you show up with a $1 million bribe or you beg and plead or whatever, I mean, there's going to be 2 weeks. That's the way they work there. They hold it until they've reached that level. Now, most of the country's not like that, but there are other places where things can take a long time. But for us, it's pretty quick, and we have one of the faster turnaround times, and that's through some of our innovation from a technology standpoint to pull these things around. But we're still really going to the courts. We're still really researching this information, and we're not pulling from some database. A lot of people have this misconception that there's this magic database in the sky or the federal government or that you can get into the fingerprinting or whatever. It doesn't work that way. You're actually, if we ran a background check on you, we would, you know, figure out where you've lived and worked and went to school, and that's where we should check, you know, out for your background. And there's some kind of protective layer over that by doing a national search to maybe catch anything else that isn't in that. That's a lot different than when the FBI does a fingerprint search. It's a completely different process. It's a different – we're all looking at the same information in the end, but we're getting it a very different way, and we're accessing a different way, and the results in many ways can be different. In some ways, this way is better, and in some ways, fingerprint can be better. It depends on the situation. But not everyone has the ability to or the permission to do those kinds of things. So – But if you're looking at something like employment verifications and education verifications and references, you know, those can take sometimes longer because we're dealing with other human beings and companies and facilitating that information, although we tend to see that we are 5 times faster on average than when people do it themselves. And that's because we do it all day long. We have people that live and breathe it, and they know when we get a request for this company, we know which person to call. I mean, we do it all day long, so we know the one person in that company to call who we can get to help us right away, as opposed to going through phone trees and tracking somebody down and leaving 100 messages, you know, when you're a company that does this only when you hire somebody. So it does vary, but, you know, our average background check is back to our clients in under 36 hours. Most is much quicker than that even, so especially if they're not doing those things like verification.
Great. So for an organization like, let's say for the audience who wanting to hire a background checking organizations, what are some key factors that they should evaluate or let's just say benchmark in order to select an organization for background screening?
Well, I think, you know, there's a couple things they can do. Certainly asking for references is great. And not the standard references, you know, just the standard 1, 2, 3. I mean, sometimes if you can ask for something, you know, for some references for people who are near your area or your industry or something other than the general 3 that, you know, a company has secured. You can certainly, I would look the company up and try to find if there's any negative information out there. There's lots of different evaluating websites that have, you know, evaluate different companies and tell you if they're good or bad. I mean, we generally are in the top 2 or 3% on those types of sites as far as, you know, customers evaluating us. Looking at the Better Business Bureau profiles, if there's been complaints, and certainly searching if there's been any lawsuits against them or FTC rulings against them. I mean, you can type in their name and FTC or their name and lawsuit or, you know, and look at that way. And then I think it's really good to talk to them about what's their process, you know, to actually deal with this work. Do they actually go to the courts? And a lot of times they'll tell you yes no matter what, and you have to kind of probe a little harder. Do they send this work out overseas. You know, in California, they recently passed a law that background check companies are not allowed to send this information overseas, yet many background check companies continue to do it. You know, as we're being told in the industry, they're sending your applicants' data and stuff to people in other countries to perform this work, which is problematic based from a privacy and security standpoint. It's also really ineffective from the standpoint of people in other countries don't understand some of the nuances culturally here when you're calling on verifications and dealing with work. We tend to find that they do a pretty bad job, and it takes a long time for those things to get turned around. So I think that you can really look at that information. And I think the last component is, does the company actively participate in education for clients, and are they in the industry being an expert in providing great information? You know, it's a little self-serving for us, and I apologize for that, but we do a good job of that. But there are other people who do a good job of that as well. And I would say those other companies are certainly more reputable than some of the other more name brand ones that don't do that education, that aren't on the forefront of that, that are kind of just, you know, bringing people in, running the checks, and it's kind of, you know, high volume, garbage in, garbage out type of a process. So I think you can find a happy medium. You can find a good company who does a lot of these things by looking at a lot of different factors. If you're looking at this purely from a price standpoint, if you're calling up a background check company and saying, I'm paying this, and if you can save me a quarter, I'll switch, you're probably going to get burned. I mean, that's really a problem. It's kind of like showing up to a car dealership and saying, I'd like to buy a Mercedes, and if you can sell it to me at the price of the lowest price car, you know, for a used car, used Fiat or something, right, then I'll do it. But there's going to be a problem, right? It's not going to come with tires.
Correct.
The engine's going to be messed up. I mean, there's always a problem, but people don't think about that process, I think, a lot.
Yeah, and by the end, after all the process, they might find that, oh, there is a problem. And they tie it to cost of hiring and then stuff like that. So what are some differences that you have faced when you interact with local clients as well as international clients when it comes to background checking?
So clarify for me, what are some of the differences in how we interact with them? Is that the question?
Mm-hmm. Yes, when you do a background checking for, let's say, a candidate who are coming from India, for example, on their H-1B or HIL-1 visa or any other visa, and how do you go about background checking for that particular candidate?
Yeah, so really I think that the difference is almost night and day. I mean, when we're dealing with someone who's located in another country who's trying to come here, the process and what we're doing for those clients is a lot different than, because every, think about the United States' complexities. We have federal laws, we have
mm-hmm.
50 different laws, then we have county laws and city laws. I mean, just the United States alone is so complex. Then you go to, let's say, India. India is a huge place. And they have their own, you know, nuances from a, you know, country level, you know, probably not state level, but province level. You know, they have their own differences the same way. And so it's a completely different puzzle that has to be done. So what we do is we make sure we have either our own people, based on how much work we may do in a particular country, our own experts that help us with that, or if we don't have very specific experts, you know, if it's someone we don't do very much work in, then we make sure we have really fantastic partners that we work with to ensure that those complexities are understood. That's where people fail, is not understanding the complexities. They say, oh, they're from India? Get me a background check in India. Well, that's like saying, go get me a background check for the United States. Well, that doesn't really work. You have to kind
mm-hmm.
of know, go much down, much, you know, more granular. Where in India, you know, what part, and how long ago was that person there, or where else have they lived? I mean, there's all these other things. So from that perspective, the international is very, very different. Whereas in the country, United States, what's available, public records, I mean, things are much different. I think they're actually more readily available in the United States than most other places. Things are more restricted, harder to get, more bureaucracy, less validity of the data in other countries. Or in some countries, it's just completely sealed off. You can't find it out or it's illegal to use. So the United States itself is almost its own animal, completely different than the rest of the world. And then, you know, people make that misconception of saying, well, I need it. The rest of the world must all work either the same as we do, or they all work their own one way, and it's not. I mean, there's probably 100,000 different ways of having to pull a background check based on where somebody lives.
Correct. Well, if I ask, like, the total crowd that you do, that your clients, and then into your background screening process to your clients, how much of percentage of clients that have approached you for, you know, using information gained from, let's just say, social media or social networking sites during screening? Or is it a last priority for them or main priority for them?
You mean data from social media?
Yes.
Yeah, so, you know, I think social media is like the next big problem for companies.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen going forward. I think a lot of the lawsuits and the courts will kind of gauge that. I mean, there's already so many laws in the books for states, and it does vary state to state, on what you can consider or know about an applicant prior to hiring them. You know, are they married? Or do they have kids? What's their sexual orientation? What's their race? What's their age? I mean, all these different things. And so when you go on to social media sites, you now are being exposed to all of those things that you're not technically supposed to be considering. And so I think it's going to get to the point here where there might be a separation between, you know, people might be using recruiters or things to try to get around that thing. You know, the recruiter's going to deal with that part or whatever. We'll see how that plays out. But you know, we do provide some solutions, and other background check companies do as well, where we will go and locate all that social media for companies and then remove all of that information that they're not supposed to see, but still help them get an idea of, you know, is this person going to be a fit from a culture standpoint, or are there red flags and different things. But I really think it's kind of the Achilles heel coming up here, that people are doing it and they're Googling people all the time and they're making assumptions about people that are probably most of the time not correct, and not proceeding with people based on these erroneous assumptions that you make from social media. Now, applicants have to get smarter. They need to restrict their profiles. They need to do a better job of what they put out there. I mean, they need, you know, there's a lot of people who aren't really monitoring that. There's a lot of stuff out there. But I really think that that's going to be the next big trouble, you know, spot for people, for companies who are actively trying to figure out their applicants by looking at their social media.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Chris, for joining with us today and sharing your lunch time with us. It's been a wonderful conversation. So where can people connect with you and come and find you?
Yeah, so they can go to peopleg2.com. You can go on the website there. You can find me on the About Us page, and you can certainly click there to contact me if you'd like, or you can follow me on Twitter at ChrisDyer7. And if you'd like to check out the radio show that we do every Tuesday, easiest thing is to go to your podcast, you know, on your iPhone or something, and type in Talent Talk, and you can go.